Welcome to the Bioelectronics Podcast by Neurocore. I'm your host, Rick Rowan, and this is where we can hear about how bioelectronics is changing healthcare and providing benefits to both patients and healthcare systems worldwide. Welcome to this week's Bioelectronics Podcast. We're excited to have our special guests, three team members of the men's GB bobsleigh team, Ben Simons, Tremaine Gilling, team captain. Is that right, Lemon?
That's correct, sir.
So we might just get you guys to give us a little bit of an intro and tell us a bit about yourselves and your background and how you became part of the team. And we'll start off with Tremaine, if that's okay.
So, yeah, my name's Tremaine Gilling. I was previously a sprinter, 100 metres, 200 metres. Competed for England and GB as a sprinter. And then I'm quite an injury-prone athlete, so after a few years of always competing quite well and then getting to the point where I get injured just before trials or something like that, got a bit frustrating. I was looking for something different to do where I could still use my skills, my speed and my power. And my coach at the time, Lloyd Cowan, who used to coach Simeon Williamson, suggested that I give bobsleigh a try because Simeon had just moved over and he was enjoying it. Gave it a go, did the trials in the Valley, did pretty well, put onto the senior squad. Really enjoyed it. Been doing bobsleigh for 5 years now. It's the best decision I've made. Better level now in bobsleigh than I ever have been in sprinting. Definitely one of the hardest things I've done. Bobsleigh is quite a difficult sport, but great sport to do.
And how's the injury count going now?
Still get injured, but I do sports massage and acupuncture and different types of therapies as well. And I kind of picked up those courses kind of to teach myself more about the body so that I can be a better athlete, and also to help give back and help others not go through what I've been going through. I get niggles here and there, but haven't had as bad injuries as I used to as a sprinter. I'm just a lot better with recovery and keeping my body up here.
Maybe some of that's getting wiser with age, maybe, Tremaine.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely.
When we start to realise we're not invincible, we make a few different choices.
Yeah. As you get older, you have to be smarter with your body rather than keep on pounding it into the ground and think you're going to get the best out of it.
Awesome. Ben?
So, yeah, I suppose my entry into the sport is slightly different to most of the people that have done quite well in the sport over the last few years. I've been in the sport now for 8 years and two Olympic cycles now. I've been to two games. But I wasn't an elite athlete before I came to bobsleigh. Mm-hmm. I was a multi-sport athlete throughout my teens, and I was relatively good at athletics as well and competed at kind of regional level. And to be fair, at a national level, when I moved to Wales to study, because I was studying sports science, that's what I was always into. But during any sort of power tests in training or even in the labs on my course at university, I was always far and beyond even elite athletes at that point, in elite track and field athletes. So there was always this kind of question mark in my head that there ought to be something out there that I could apply these skills to. And that didn't really come to me until I literally saw a poster in my university training center saying, could you push your country at the next Olympics? And there was a picture of a bobsleigh and four big guys jumping into it. And I thought, I'm probably too small for that. I was 78 kilos at the time, wet through. But, you know, I'll give it a go because they're pure power tests. I'm pretty good at those and they look like a lot of fun. Long story short, I did very well in those tests. I did very well on the push-specific tests in Bath University and made it onto the squad that way. Nice. And since then, the ability to train full-time and have full sports science and sports medicine support that I never got, essentially just a weekend warrior athlete beforehand, my physical abilities went through the roof. And so, yeah, got to mirror Tremaine on that. It was definitely the best decision that I ever made. And throughout that whole process, I was still studying, actually, throughout the Sochi Olympic Games. I was still doing my part-time master's in sports mm-hmm. science. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've taken it upon myself to do a sports massage course, acupuncture course, and start my own coaching and programming business, which has been quite successful over the, that's now 3 years, just going on 3 years old.
And quite well read on the science of EMS, which we can come back to later.
I like to think so, but I definitely need to swat up some more. but it's a modality that I've used quite a lot in my career, both before and after bobsleigh, actually. And that was, as we've talked about, was through the Charlie Francis teachings, really, in the literature that he brought out years ago. So I got my first unit, probably back in 2007, 2008, and I've loved it ever since. And it's always been something people will look at me with, you know, hooked up to these electrode pads and kind of raise an eyebrow. What are you doing? Sat on a long flight with your muscles twitching, but it works well. And that's why I'm delighted to have this relationship that we've got with you guys.
Thank you. Just for the listeners that don't know, Charlie Francis was a renowned Canadian sprint track and field, would you say?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Sometimes referred to as the godfather of EMS. Was using it for athlete development as early back as the 60s and 70s, but prolifically through the 80s and into the 90s, written a couple of books on it. And still his training protocols are well used today.
Definitely, yeah.
And Lehman, team captain, tell us about yourself and tell us about the team.
The team captain and pilot, two-time Olympian, but I wasn't always a driver. My background, a little bit different from the other two. I was very, very sporty when I was young. My main passion in sport were basketball and boxing. I joined the army at 16 years old, where I was allowed to do a lot of the two sports that I love: an army boxer, army basketballer, and then I became an army physical training instructor. I was a very, very, very robust soldier. In the sort of infantry regiment that I came from, it wasn't cool to be injured. It wasn't cool to miss out on a PT session. It wasn't, you know, it was sort of a sign of weakness. So I was very, very robust. If I had a niggle, it wouldn't even register. You know, you'd still go out and do your 8, your 10 miler. Mm-hmm. How I got into the sport. So being a sporty guy, you know, within a regiment of 800 people, you always had athletics competitions, you know, swimming competitions, whatever it is. And they needed someone to fill those slots. So when athletics came on, I got a memo. Well, it wasn't a memo. It was a bang on the door at 5 o'clock in the morning saying, oh, by the way, you're going to athletics in Aldershot, funnily enough. I went down there. I didn't know how to do any sort of drills. I just knew how to run. That was it. When the gun went, run. I was entered into a 200-meter dash, 200-meter sprint, which I clearly didn't want to do. But a long story short, I won the race. They just happened to be bobsleigh recruiters, army bobsleigh recruiters at the finish line. Bizarre, I know. From then, I was asked to go down to the University of Bath to undergo some testing, which I think at the time it was a 30-meter sprint, an array of 5 jumps. I got into the team as a brakeman, a pusher, and then never looked back. That was in 2007. In 2010, I made my transition into piloting, then qualified as a pilot for the 2014 Olympic Games. And then subsequently in 2018, also competed with Ben, who's on the podcast. Since 2018, myself, Ben and Tremaine, the last 2 years have been part of the same team. Ben last season and Tremaine both last season and the previous season. But we have a quite a large lineup, a big squad. We are, you know, all working towards the 2022 games in Beijing, and hoping to win a medal there.
Very cool. And is your boxing background, is that why you're the captain?
Of course, yeah. Because if anyone's out of line, then you know what happens. But also, there's a little bit of a crossover between me and Tremaine, because, and I know he's going to say something, because many years ago, my coach, and, you know, he's still a good friend of mine, then, is his coach now. So Tremaine was a young sprinter. And I remember approaching him in the gym in Crystal Palace and asked him if he wanted to come along to bobsleigh. And he looked at me like I just fell out of one of his body parts. And it's a funny old world, because I remind him every year. I go, remember that time when you denied me, or you denied my invitation? And here we are.
Excellent. How often, tell me, or if you guys give, tell us a little bit about the training regimen at the moment in the lead up to, because obviously soon, as the weather changes here for UK and Europe, you'll start doing course testing, is that right?
Sure. Sorry, guys. So the general layout is, during the summer months, we will, from around late May, June, but it hasn't been possible this year for obvious reasons. We'll be on the dry push track. That's where we'll learn or relearn, retouch up on our skills, whether it be the pushing side of it or the loading, the timing of the bobsleigh push is very, very technical. You can imagine you've got four guys pushing as fast as they can, and then suddenly, within the space of 3 seconds, they all have to load into a space no more than 3 meters. You know, you can imagine with all feet in the right places, heads in the right places. You know, we're no spring chickens. I'll speak for myself. So we all have to get in, get compact, and ready for the course. So the tracks around Europe usually have ice in order for us to do pre-season around October time. Again, this year has been a bit tricky. So, and that's when we all head out and start doing some course testing, not only testing ourselves to see what sort of shape we're in as a crew, but also the equipment itself, to see what our pace is like, in comparison to our other British teams, you know, and the teams around the world before we really start hitting the international competition.
Yeah, and Tremaine mentioned about, for instance, injury. So do you have a set team training, as in specific to the team, sort of the, you know, training protocol that you all adhere to, or do you? You know, do you have individual training protocols? Obviously, outside of the team training itself, when you're training on the sled or the pushing, what about, you know, your general fitness and performance training?
That's that's pretty individualized between athletes. And when the program was a little bit bigger during the last training cycle, there were a number of physical coaches employed by British Bobsleigh, as well as physiotherapists, etc. And they tended to take care of the athlete programs and training sessions. And we're a lot more self-led now. And so a lot of guys have got their own personal coach. Lamin's got a personal coach. Trem's got a personal coach. But then we also have team coaches on board that will guide our specific push sessions and advise us on our training programs as well. I think with most of the athletes on the crew now, we're a little bit older and wiser, so we kind of will use our own coaches and contacts that we've developed over the years. But that wasn't the case over the last couple of cycles, when there were dedicated performance coaches employed by British Bobsleigh. For the most part, people were on their programming in their training sessions.
Gotcha.
But interestingly enough, there has always been the option for athletes to be autonomous and use their own coaches, which isn't the case in other world-class performance programs, cycling and skeleton, for example. They seem pretty set on using the employed coaches. But we've always, and I think that's probably the influence of track and field, because we had a number of dual athletes that would do both sports. Summer they do track and winter they do bobsleigh. And so they had to stick, it kind of followed the athletics model there, whereas you choose your coach. And then the when you come together as a team, that's when you need to perform. So people kind of, when we're away on season now, people follow slightly different training plans, but we try and at least get our heads together so that we're on the kind of same session, whether it be speed or strength on the same day, just so that we can get together. And we might be doing different exercises, sets and reps, but we're still training together.
Yeah. And is it common, or is it, I'm assuming it's quite common then for most bobsleigh teams to be made up of a lot of sprint athletes?
Yeah, more often than not, the transfer is from sprinting, and certainly track and field, but you do get a lot of throwers and jumpers and, and hurdlers and multi-eventers. In other nations, you get, I mean, we get a little bit of transfer from rugby in the UK. In other nations, there is some transfer from other sports. American football and Canadian football is quite big in North America. In Germany, actually transferring from other ice sports. So there are many pilots that start doing luge when they're only infants, young children. They'll literally start luge. So then they'll often transfer to piloting. But there's transfer from many, many sports, but it's because there's a number of different abilities that you need to push a sled. And that skill-wise, it's relatively raw. So if you're very powerful, very strong and quick, then you just have that bit of magic that gives you the ability to push, then you're good. And you find that in all sorts of different sports. But for the most part, it's the well-trodden path between sprinting and bobsleigh for sure.
And a bit of a self-serving question here. Who's the most prolific user of NeuroCore technology?
That's an interesting question, actually, because I think most of the lads have had the units longer than me.
Yeah.
I'd say that I'm probably the most established user of EMS itself. But you know, my experience with my experience with the MyBody, I use that quite a lot on season. And then I've only recently got the MyTouch and have been getting my head around it. But I've seen Lamin using it quite a bit, to be fair.
Yes, I do use it quite a bit. However, there's a running joke that Tremaine is the face of NeuroCore because he uses it at all times. You know, he's always got it on, always.
Yeah, it doesn't run without it.
I use it a lot. So as I said, I'm quite big with recovery, and so I use it quite a lot in combination with other things. So I do quite a lot of acupuncture to myself and a lot of mobility stuff. So I will go through a routine every night before I got a training session, whether it's stretching, NeuroCore, self-massage, getting the Graston tool in, and just trying to make sure that my body is in the best shape the night before so that the next day I don't need to do as much. And that's my routine every day.
Do you find, I mean, there's many, you know, physiological reasons, but do you find just in general that it helps with, you know, keeping you, I don't know if loose is the right word, but supple is probably a better word, particularly for the worked muscle groups?
Definitely. Again, I'm very experimental as well, so I'll do it. I'll whilst I'm stretching, I might put it whilst I'm on a stretch. A big difference doing that as well. It just just makes me feel a lot more relaxed, a lot more just ready, I guess. It's just...
I do have a slightly side question. You mentioned about your weight, Ben. So this is probably for all of you. Is there an advantage to a heavier or lighter total sled weight?
So there's a maximum sled and crew weight.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is, if you don't have that weight in bodies,
mm-hmm.
You've got to make it up with ballast, which okay. is usually some lead. So that's one thing that's changed from Cool Runnings to now, is that that's not illegal anymore.
okay.
So, you know, running a sled light is a massive disadvantage when it's a gravity sport mm-hmm. and a momentum sport.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of reasons why it's better to have that weight in muscle and men than it is in just dead weight, which is lead.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, it's like it's a double-edged sword. So the lighter you are, you're already a light guy pushing a heavy object, and then mm-hmm. that object becomes relatively heavier for every kilo you are under 105 kilos, because that's your perfect four-man crew. It's four mm-hmm. guys at 105 kilos and mm-hmm. a 210 kilo sled, which is the minimum weight of the sled itself.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you maximum weight, sled and crew, with no lead or ballast in the sled.
And with the lead up to, I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, early days of lockdown, et cetera, impacted, you know, a lot of the potential usual training regimes, et cetera. You know, did you guys find any additional injury issues when you were sort of coming back into things or in the lead up to this season?
I think, and we actually, after we came out of lockdown, I think it was a few weeks later, we had a start standard test where we do the 30-meter sprints and the jumps and the lifts. And actually on the lifts, bearing in mind a lot of the crew didn't have heavy weights available to do any sort of lifting, were only maybe 5 or 10 kilos off their personal best, which really? Was... you know, it's mind-boggling, to be honest. Me personally, injury-wise, because I've done a lot of, well, if you like, conditioning circuits, you know, all that sort of stuff during the lockdown period, I found that when I went into training, I was generally in better condition than I would have been normally. So I was forced to rest as well. Rest was a big part of it, you know. Forced rest and not actually grinding your body or you know, through it 24/7. So it was forced rest, and you know, I felt really good coming back into it. I don't know about the other guys.
I think
it's, sorry mate,
enough of what Lamin said is I think over the lockdown it kind of gave, or for me personally, gave me an opportunity to look at areas that I probably haven't been able to look at normally, because you're all focused on all other parts of life, and you're able to really focus on training, really focus on these little areas that you don't usually work on. I was literally spending 3 to 4 hours a day just training, just working on what needed to be worked on, what I did wrong last season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't have my gym, but as Lamin said, a lot of us came back in very good shape in the gym. And I think it's just that we had a lot of things, mentally we were a lot better, and physically we were able to just work on those little areas. And I think that kind of played a big part to it.
There's I've noticed a bit of a trend across some of the stuff I've seen from performance coaches worldwide. And there's been some quite surprising results from people being forced out of the weight room, certainly in speed and power sports, but even with just strength maintenance through other means. I kind of had the opposite experience during lockdown because, I mean, unfortunately for them, a mate of mine opened a lockup gym the day before lockdown in the UK. So we had to shut it again. But we had a set of keys. So I was able to use the gym, but I wasn't able to use the track because the track was locked down. So I ended up doing a lot of gym and used it as an opportunity to put on some of the mass that I need. And that was very successful. But all in all, athletically it was difficult, and I ended up with a couple of Achilles issues off that, just because of the way that my body adapts to doing a lot of heavy compound lifting. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of kind of athletic based based guys, and you see this in bobsleigh. You have more strength based guys and you have more speed based guys, and that's a bit of a generalization, but it does ring quite true. I'm definitely on the speed end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
and I think you've got to be a lot more mindful of the way that you load those athletes. Mm-hmm. But actually, going back to the subject of EMS, I know a couple of coaches now that believe that, and I have heard this before actually, that using EMS training modalities, especially for performance, is very important at the end of the later years in somebody's career when they've mm-hmm. already got a lot of lifting mm-hmm. and a lot of volume under their belt. And there's a few different proposed reasons for that. Mm-hmm. But in fact, there was a Swiss bobsleigher who was also the Swiss 60 meter record holder. You remember him, Lamin, Cedric Grund.
Yeah.
Real specimen. But I remember his coach telling me that they years ago had an EMS suit for him, and that he would do most of his loading actually in the gym at a lower overall load, but mm. using EMS muscle stimulation whilst doing those movements. And that's something I think, when I've used EMS in the past, and certainly from the Charlie Francis protocols, I wasn't changing the joint position, certainly when I was doing EMS max strength protocols. And I definitely think there's something to certainly getting into isometric positions at different joint angles to develop strength, which can certainly lessen the frequency of gym work that you need, and you may even get superior performance benefits. But that's the journey that I'm going to be taking now through the next couple of years leading up to Beijing, and trying to put these theories into practice.
Yeah, there's a bit of science there around the total muscle fiber recruitment theology, as well as also to the types of fibers that are recruited that are not needed. You know, you're not maxing out the load to do that, where ordinarily you know, the bigger the load or the harder the load, then usually the more recruitment, but you're able to recruit more with less.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that first jumped out at me when I started reading EMS literature, was like the reversal of the ramp theory, that with EMS mm-hmm. you're going to be activating the higher threshold motor units first, mm-hmm. which is kind of the holy grail of all of your training, your warm up, mm-hmm. your ramp and getting any sort of intensity. You've got to go through all of these layers before you even touch those high threshold motor units. And so yeah, there's definitely something in it there. I certainly got super strong when I used to use the strength modalities.
You don't want to give too much away to the competition though.
That's a good point. I'll keep it in-house and training clients.
Just a quick question. Are any of you guys using much in the way of microcurrent for your recovery management?
So, yeah, but personally, I certainly use the MyBody unit for recovery quite mm-hmm. a bit. Although I have been pretty surprised at the power and strength of that unit. If you ramp it up, mm-hmm. geez. So I've been using that for just for activation as well. So, and this is something where I think EMS can be used so well, and mm-hmm. good physios do it. There'll be certain areas that are perhaps, for whatever reason, switched off, for want of a mm-hmm. better term. Mm-hmm. For me, it's usually my VMOs that cause knee pain, mm-hmm. and then peroneals on the lower leg. Basically, my ankles are a little bit unstable. If I stim the peroneals, then mm-hmm. they will miraculously be a bit more stable. If I stim my VMOs, and certainly one of our teammates, Joel, who had terrible tendinopathy of his patella tendons, mm-hmm. and tried every sort of loading strategy through isometrics and everything that is recommended through literature, mm. but then he found that stimming VMOs before sessions every day mm-hmm. worked perfectly. And I was surprised really that the MyBody unit was powerful enough to do that. I thought I'd have to use the MyTouch. Mm-hmm. But recovery wise, when I'm traveling and I'm a passenger, it's absolutely brilliant. I just put those on my legs. I just get a good capillarization or flush out, and the blood flow, you just feel the heat coming out of your muscles. Yeah. Blood flow is fantastic.
We've done a bit of thermal imagery testing, and mm-hmm. it's quite dramatic actually. We're even surprised sometimes, and actually surprised at the modalities that give the best circulation improvement.
I was honestly shocked at the heat coming off my quads on some of my body settings, because mm-hmm. obviously they're very specific to the kind of pulse rate and stuff. And yeah. I was like, that's not something that I'm used to with the kind of old school EMS units that I was using. And I was very, very surprised. I could feel the heat coming off. I was like, wow, the bang for buck there is huge.
Well, glad to hear that, I must say.
I would like to know the kind of specifics of the different modalities on. So like if you're on the My Body, you've got X amount of modalities, and on the My Touch, for example, you know, X amount of performance modalities. I suppose like the frequency of each of those modalities, and kind of where, how, if the frequency is changing between pulsing and pure contraction, ramp times, you know, the kind of basics that have been, that they're not obvious within the product because it's something that the general public don't want to know about. And when I get that, it makes ease of use so much easier. But for a geek like me, yeah, I suppose I'd like to know some of that.
There's two theories. One is you give a lot of choices, and you separate out all the specific applications. And My Touch does do that a little bit. That's why there's four modes within each application. And then, you know, is that an advantage or is it an advantage for something like the My Body, where essentially you've got quite a broad spectrum? You know, it's almost like a meal in a box, if you like, that's sort of got a mixture of things, versus going to the My Touch, where you can, you know, choose the different pieces that you want. So the My Body has a couple of modes there. You know, one or two of them are suitable for recovery because they've got slower ramp speeds, they don't pull on the muscle as much, and they're literally there to help stimulate circulatory benefit. And often the stimulation of circulatory benefit also loosens the muscle, which was sort of what I was saying to Tremaine earlier about just making the muscle a bit more supple. It releases it, is probably a good word. And then, you know, there's also, we have got a mode in there, or there's two actually, that would also be useful at high level for contraction or motor activation. But they're not, in all fairness, they're not specifically designed just for that purpose. You know, that little device and even the My Touch, they are were devices, consumer devices, and they're punching well above their weight. You know, we've got some groundbreaking disruptive stuff that you guys will get access to, I won't say soon, but soonish. That will give you you'll probably be some of the first athletes on the planet to get hold of some of this tech. We're obviously super excited about, but all of those things, whether it's from recovery to tissue oxygenation to a whole range of things that you as an athlete and, you know, as a trainer would be interested in useful as tools are on their way.
My question is, for in a sport like bobsled, which is so, it's a sport of fine margins, isn't it, really? Because there's so much similarity in what people are doing, but seemingly there's so much difference in the end outcome. What separates the best bobsleigh teams from, I suppose, the good?
It's a good question. It's probably one for Lamin. There's definitely a number of facets.
There's a few factors. Well, there's three factors that we work by. The start, the equipment, and the drive. But within those three factors, there's many more. For me and my personal interests, and we've seen it, myself and Ben, in 2017, we with another two, we held the record for speed, 97 miles an hour, which there's only actually been only two sleds that have gone faster by 0.3 of a kilometer an hour. But I think it's discipline. Discipline is the word, from, you know, the push, you know, actually applying the power at the right time, how you load into the sled to create velocity. But every and each person, because we're working with fine margins, as you said, correctly said, you know, if one person steps on the side of the sled too late or is at a too vertical angle, creating drag for affecting velocity, and then once in the sled, having the discipline to sit in the right position, to have your head in the correct position, your hands in the right position, so again, not creating drag and the aerodynamics of the sled when you are traveling at over 80 miles an hour. You know, and you have a slight lack of discipline on a certain straight or a certain corner, that could be the factor that, number one, creates drag, number two, affects the balance of the sled when the pilot's steering, number three, just again going back to the velocity, there's so much. So it's the discipline, and discipline could come under your warm-up. You know, if you don't warm up correctly because you're not focused enough, and then you pull a hamstring, and it is all sorts. Because between the first, the gold medal winner, to the 10th place finisher, you could have a tenth of a second. It could be 100th per person. We've had it on many occasions where there's been two-way, three-way ties for over two heats. You know, so fine margin, it all comes down to individual discipline and team discipline.
So it becomes quite a lot about mental strength as well, doesn't it, if you're talking about the discipline over time, because it, as you say, it includes the discipline to train properly, to warm up properly, and then I suppose the concentration when you're on a run, or if you call it that, you know, if the concentration just has to be absolutely on point, which then becomes about what you've eaten in the day or how you've got the sleep in 8 hours. You know, it seems that it's a sport that obviously requires you to peak at exactly the right times, that everything has to come together.
Basically, you have to concentrate for 4 years. Yeah.
That's another reason why there's a large military element to it as well. Because me and Tremaine are both civilians, but there's always been a large military element to bobsleigh, not just in Britain, but around the world. But it is, and I've been told this by soldiers, that this is as close as you'll get to the military without being in the military, because the whole discipline and preparation side of things is just so key and so important. Because not only are you in a team, you're your own mechanics, you're your own pit crew, and it's a dangerous sport. So not only if you mess up, it's not your neck on the line, it's the rest of your boys. And what other situation do you have that if you're not in the military or, say, fire service, something like that? It's just very different. So for me, it was definitely a rude awakening 8 years ago. And I know other civilians have said the same thing. And that's sometimes why military lads do slot in very easily to that kind of lifestyle. Because it's a big, as somebody who is a scruffy, still is, looks like a scruffy student. When I first came into this military environment, yeah, I was getting absolutely thrashed, but I'm a little bit better now. So ask Lamin, he might say no.
Also, Ben, I think one thing you forgot to mention is when you first came into the sport, I know I'm going back slightly, is you were probably a lot more injury prone than Tremaine was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was terrible. Yeah. But then that comes with being overzealous when you're younger as well. And overreaching, because I'm trying to gain a place in the squad rather than maintain a place, and you just become a lot wiser. And again, I'm kind of mirroring what Tremaine said. I think that's one of the reasons I have a passion now for coaching the various athletes that I have, is because I don't want them making the same mistakes as I did. And yeah,
I can definitely see where Nuricor fits into you guys, because it seems to be about precision. It's fine margins. It's optimizing absolutely everything. It's getting those final 0.1%, isn't it? And I suppose that's what Nuricor is allowing you to do, which is to, you know, increase blood flow to your quads on a car journey. That might be the thing that separates that hundredth of a second from second place, yeah. Right?
It's, yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's literally an ideal situation for us to have something like Nuricor, because A, we have long journeys, we have long flights. B, we don't always have the best warm-up or training areas. For the most part, it's a garage in the hotel we're staying at, or it's the road outside the bobsleigh track. And yeah, we have to maintain a huge amount of strength in conditions that aren't ideal. And also, coming back to another one of the main theories and reasons that Charlie Francis used them back in the day, is because you don't actually have to use your central nervous system to gain strength from these sessions. Well, we're all, and this is something that we haven't talked about really, is it's an incredibly stressful sport from literally every angle. So our kind of tolerance for load on season is very low. So having this, the EMS units from Nuricor with us will, I think, be a massive advantage.
I agree, Ben. I agree that this, and I forgot to mention the stress. I wish you could put it on your brain, I tell you. It's incredible. And because of the fine margins, and sometimes, you know, you've had these long days as well. You know, you might have crashed. You might have crashed in training. You know, a lot of people do it. You know, when you're trying to push the limits and gain a hundredth of a second or, you know, 200 of a second, a little story going back to 2016, was it, Ben, in Eagles?
Yeah, 2016. All right.
Yeah, sore subject, I know. 2016 in Eagles, we went, myself, Ben, Bruce, and Joel Fearon, we went into a race. I think we were maybe ranked 8th or 9th. And this World Championships was over 4 heats. Overnight, we jumped up to 4th. I had a conversation with the head coach, the ice coach, and we're doing some analysis, and we were talking about the areas on the track that, you know, I could make up time. And we're not talking about, you know, a quarter of a second here. No, oh, well, you lost a hundredth there and 200th there, and, you know, you could maybe gain another hundredth there. You know, you may be steering too much here. So, you know, all the areas combined, 500th maybe. So we had this, I think it was around corner 9, corner 10 area, that we wanted to you know, gain this time back. So we went on the run, and I remember getting to this area and, you know, going back to the conversation we had the night before, and something just told me to, you know, just let it fly, you know, just let it fly, don't steer, that's where the hundredths are going to be gained, and I crashed, you know. And from the split times, we were already in seconds, you know, we didn't know at the time, but coming down the track, we're already in silver medal position, and, you know, continuing on that, on the trend without letting it fly, we probably would have ended up, you know, a couple of hundredths from first, and then we would have gained that. But again, this is just going back to the trying to find, you know, these hundredths. And, you know, with Neurocore, I'm quite positive we can find those hundredths. Maybe if we don't find them in the track, we can definitely find them on the push at the top.
All right, James, Lamin, Tremaine, Ben, it's been fascinating having a chat with you guys. We really do appreciate the time, and best of luck with the season ahead.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks very much for having us, and thanks for the support.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Bioelectronics Podcast by Neurocore and for making it to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. We'd much appreciate it. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow us on all of our socials so you don't miss out on any of the latest bioelectronic content.